jinkies. Oh, what's that gross book made out of skin?
It's not a book. It's a tome made out of skin.
Ew. What's it say?
Behold the collected apocrypha of Stacy Ponder, the writer for Final Girl.
And Anthony Hudson, the programmer for Queer Horror.
And together they are...
Oh my god! Don't read it out loud! Don't read it out
loud! Gay Lords of Darkness!
Listeners.
What the fuck?
I just blew Anthony's mind with the information. Like, exploded Anthony's head. Like, I've never heard
full,
it explode before.
Full, I, of all the times it's exploded, I mean, this one was full scanners.
This is full scanners. Scanners times 10. With the information that Wendy's used to have salad bars.
What? Literally right before, like, Stacey revealed this information. Naturally, this information came through us just casually talking, like we always do before we record, about Stacey's new goals of becoming a human salad bar hybrid built into
a hover
round.
A Cenobite. No.
Yes. A salad bite.
A salad bite. No, this is okay. In case you didn't know, listeners, we're in the middle of a pandemic, okay? And I was wondering where people are getting their face masks. Like not the mask, but the face shield.
That's
the
where shield. It came from.
Yeah, regular people have these face shields now. And I said, where are they? And I said that maybe I could buy a disused salad bar, put it on a, like, hover round.
Become a salad tank.
I could stick my head up through one of the holes where, say, the shredded carrots used to be. And I could be protected on all sides and ensure social distancing, because salad bars are pretty big.
Yeah, you have 2 shopping carts distance on either side with that salad bar.
And then I said, maybe there's a Wendy's that has closed because of coronavirus. Maybe they've, you know, it went out of business. And they would be selling their old salad bar at a discount. And Anthony lost all control.
Wait, are you buying this? But now you're buying it, which is closed down Wendy's. You could have just taken it, but you're
that's true.
You're purchasing a disused something that has not been in the Wendy's for at least 20 or 30 years. You're purchasing this from them, and you're buying the salad bar itself, which I think implies all the fixins.
Oh, which, I would assume,
and not. Talking about the blast shield? The splash guard?
Yeah, that's the whole point. The sneeze guard.
But I love the idea of the salad bar itself.
Well, I'm buying that too. And then you see what happens is the hover
it's
round
a 2-for-1 deal.
And my body are in the salad bar part. I stick my head up through a hole like a whack-a-mole. And then the sneeze guards are there to protect me. Do you see?
On a motorized wheel.
On a motorized wheelchair so I can go. It sounds very Mad Max, right? Wait until the Thunderdome when I roll up in that bad boy.
Is that a fucking salad bar?
Do you guys smell ranch? Here she comes.
Her name is the Wendy's Super Bar.
Yeah.
And you could get all the Italian, all the Mexican, and all the salad you can eat. Anything's possible. You can build a burrito, and you can make the well-dressed salad.
What? I hadn't had it since they went all international. I just had salad, and then they had, like, some pudding.
What? So this is like, it's like a Sizzler style salad bar.
Yeah, it's where a salad bar.
It's always the pudding.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Always the pudding. And when you're 10, this is Nirvana.
Oh.
And then when you grow up, you say, not if it was the last fucking pudding on earth. Like,
oh my God. I had a friend that was a secret shopper and got assigned the Sizzler. And so we had to go, and then he had to like pretend that they got the order wrong, and it was the most mortifying moment of my life. But we were like, okay, well, I guess we'll just get the salad bar. And so we went and we were looking at the salad bar. I clearly had not seen one since I was 10. It was the most mortifying thing I've seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
All I could say is thank God for the Goldfish crackers selection, because that was all I ate.
I can't do it. I know that sometimes that's like the lunchtime bargain, like the Indian restaurants have the buffet laid out. Like, I am not.
Oh,
I know you. That. I know you're a casino buffet gal.
Thank you for seeing me.
I am not into, I'm just not into the bars and the buffets and the, I'll just give me my plate of food, please.
I love a buffet, but it's like, it has to be an upper echelon buffet. Like, I'm not saying it has to be top tier, but like higher end buffet is like, that's, you know, there's still boogers in it. Let's be
real.
Acknowledging it. But like, you know, maybe I've been known to dabble in Izzy's. But maybe a Sizzler is just a little bit.
Someone's going to lean over and flake into your noodles.
Oh, God.
It's just not for me, but.
I can't believe Wendy's had it. Why did Wendy's have a salad bar?
So you had the healthier option.
What the fuck? It looked like it was from the 80s, but here's a photo of the Wendy's salad bar. The Wendy's salad bar is back, but is it really that exciting? Says the head. That's the hot fake news headline.
It was, you know how, like, young folk, I don't know if the young folk of today, with their TikToks, if they enjoy these same feelings. But when you're, like, you know, old and like 16, so someone that you know has a car probably or something, and you're just starting to be independent and go do things without your parents. Like, the Wendy's salad bar is very exciting and sophisticated at that age. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know, breadsticks were like a one percenter kind of food.
Oh,
you know
real.
What I mean? Like that kind of thing.
I mean, well, that's why Olive Garden was paradise back in the 90s. You sit down, you get unlimited salad and breadsticks. You eat just those breadsticks, you're a rich man.
I can't. I mean, if you enjoy a salad bar now or the Wendy's salad bar experience, first of all, in a post-COVID world.
The Wendy's salad bar experience.
If that sounds thrilling to you, I say, good for you. Like, take joy in this life where you can. I can't now imagining myself ever saying, I'm going to go to Wendy's and get the salad bar.
It is. You know, we're going through a lot of cultural upheavals, but really, it is a dark day for the salad bar, this America, this new American life.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I don't know if they'll ever come back. There's just something about that kind of food trough experience. it's not for me. That's fine.
I hear you. However, I feel personally slighted and denied experience that I will never know what it means to sit there with dip my fries in my Frosty and then cover a plate of soft-boiled eggs in chunky dressing.
Excuse me, it was a styrofoam bowl.
Okay. Oh my God, I just found a picture of it. It is.
Now that is a yesteryear experience.
Oh, Stacey, look at the plastic beige tongs.
Yep.
Doesn't that just take you back?
Now, picture my head sticking out of one of those holes instead of
you have a little tong hat.
Instead of sliced cucumbers. Oh, I can hold the tongs, snap them at people who get too close.
Oh, because you're now also a crab.
Yeah, like, well, there's so many holes in the top of a salad bar. I could stick all sorts of things in and out of them.
Ooh.
That's right. Now,
salad bar after dark.
Yeah. Excuse me, cashier at Rite Aid. Would you please just drop my bag into that hole? And then I drive away. This is a perfect experience.
You don't know how many DMs I get that just say that.
I'm sure you do. Ah, just drop it into the hole.
Complete with the tong emoji.
Where should I put this? Just drop it into the hole. Sex.
Oh.
Outside of pandemic time, where do kids today have their sophisticated experiences?
Kids don't have that now. They just have FaceTime. They have to tong on their own.
That's right. That's how we all start.
It's all, yeah, self-discovery. you cyber tong. Oh, yeah.
I was going to talk about tonging with the left hand, so it feels like... So it feels like someone else is placing cucumber slices on your plate, as they say.
Yeah, you just sit on your tongue until it gets numb. And then you dish up with an unfamiliar hand.
That's right.
You ever had a stranger tongue?
Do you ever give yourself a numb tongue? Anyway, it's the last day.
It's the last day.
In case you can't tell, it's the last day of our marathon fundraiser.
We are freshly catanned. We are full bonk, have completely no semblance of self or awareness or any combination of the two. But listen, Stacey, we are at right now. We haven't even reached a grand total. We are, as we're recording this, we have another day left, but this is the last day for our listeners, basically.
Yeah.
And right now, we are at, can I get an air horn? Thank you to the Sea Lion Circus. We are at $4,773.
Oh my God.
That is raised in the last, I think, just 6 days with 103 different beautiful, angelic, cherubim listeners.
The best looking listeners.
The sexiest, like, they have the comeliest splash bars.
Oh my gosh. Oh my.
On them. Those dollars are coming out of all the holes.
Yeah.
And going right into these holes.
Yeah. That's amazing. Thank you all so much. The folks who have donated, the folks who have spread the word. I think we'll hit our goal. Our goal is $5,000.
Yeah.
And I think we can do it. It's already, our original goal was $1,000. We've just, thermometers exploding left and right.
Yeah. Yeah, we are just, it's a thermometer pyrotechnic moment. This is our concert. Briefcase Woman is like, she's like doing the guitar solo and she's like, yow! And then all the thermometers explode mercury all over the audience. Mm-hmm. And it's, which is totally fine, according to health code. Totally
it's
fine.
It's not going to splash on me, not in my salad bar tank.
Not in your salad bar tank. So we have...
See? I bet you all, now you're all looking for a Wendy's, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. You have a salad bar tank. You have a hover round. You have baby arms. You're also a bag of haunted recordings. Are you Inspector Gadget, Stacey?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Maybe I would.
If I'm not, I should be.
We are some amount of dollars over $200 away from our goal. Mm-hmm. This is incredible. Technically, this goes through Sunday, I think. We don't exactly know how time works anymore.
No, we're not exactly sure when it ends.
But we believe Sunday, a.k.a. tomorrow, if you're listening. Today.
Wait. I think it ends
the day you listen
on Monday. I think it ends on Monday.
We don't know if that's Monday at night midnight or Sunday at night midnight.
Right. We don't know what time Monday, but I believe we put in the last day is Monday. So
just be happy that we've made it to this point, that we at least can speak to anything anymore, even if we don't know when the fundraiser is technically over. But we are just about 200 away from our goal. I think we're going to make that, today. But I would love to see us surpass that goal. We keep upping the thermometer, but I'd love to just see it up on its own. I would love to see us come out at, I don't know, I think 5-3 or 5-3-3-3 would be a great number.
Sure.
Or even more than that. If you want to get us to a 6666, I mean, that's creepy to send to a charity, but it's still a themed number, and we love themed numbers, so.
Absolutely.
And all of this, listeners, once again, this whole week, everything we subjected ourselves to, rings, was all for the work done by the National Black Justice Coalition. As you know, I hope you know this by now, the National Black Justice Coalition is a civil rights organization focused on empowering Black LGBTQ and same gender loving people. And their mission is to end racism, homophobia, and LGBTQ/SGL bias and stigma. And you can learn about them at nbjc.org. And once again, keep this link in mind and please share it, email it. You could do like Samara and you could just forward it to all your contacts and they'll say, wow, real cool fundraiser, like the second they get the email.
Yeah, burn it into someone's hand in Braille.
Yeah. Listen, approach all avenues like Samara would. This is at mightycause.com/story/7VG1JG. And you can find that linked on all our social media. We'll keep that link up until this fundraiser is over. And just keep donating and keep sharing. And wow, I'm so excited and so grateful.
Me too. Me too. I knew we had the best listeners, the best, smartest, most attractive listeners.
Honestly, Stacey.
But this has just proven it.
And we go back and forth with the horror community because we spend too much time on horror Twitter, unfortunately. Horror Twitter is a cesspit. And
yeah.
This community has revealed itself as very rife with problems, just like pretty much any other community, honestly. We're all going through times of shaking it up. But I have to say, while I might feel a disconnect with horror community in general that's just willing to bless the cornfields because Joe Bob said, if you had a problem with me, send me an email.
Yeah.
But I have to say, our listeners, this is the horror community that I love and that I could not be more happy to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are so cool. You're so cool. Your outfits look so good. I love the way you're wearing your hair now.
Exactly.
And I mean, $4,773 of love for the National Black Justice Coalition. This is really awesome. It's a great accomplishment. And and it's not done yet.
It's not done yet. We have one more day. It's the Day of the Dead. Day of the Brain Dead, am I right? It's been a week.
You know what, Stacey? I could not be happier that we are ending on this note.
Same.
Once again, thank God we did not conclude this on the seventh day with rings.
Yeah.
Because Day of the Dead, it's a good fucking movie.
I adore this movie. My heart boner for this movie is so big.
Yeah.
I feel like this was my first Romero zombie movie.
Oh, really?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Wow.
Because they were off limits when I was a youth. Like, my parents wouldn't let me watch them.
Right, you could watch, like, anything but not zombie movies, right?
Yeah, and so I want to say it's my first Romero movie, but probably Creepshow was my first Romero movie.
Oh.
But my first Romero zombie movie, and I mean, man. What an introduction, right?
Your first of the dead.
I have such fond feelings for this movie. Watching it again, it made me really miss George Romero, right? Like, I think this is 1985, and I do honestly feel like this is his last great film. But I just,
Diary of the Dead. I have things to say about that.
Yeah, but I just really miss him.
Thank you, Salad Bar, for echoing my feelings.
Beep, beep!
You have the little tongs, but one of the rotors or something are broken, quack, so you quack. Can only move sideways like a crab. The whole time I was watching it, I was just thinking, man, this guy, I mean, it helps that, like, he was so, like, progressive and, like, basically a hippie. Like, mm-hmm. He was so fucking cool, so indie, so DIY. And if you look at his work alongside the other horror masters, who was constantly making sure that they had diverse casts, that they had a black lead in every one of their films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and who always, his films, like, we watched it with Maddie, and Maddie's like, wow, this is not what I thought this would be. I thought there'd just be way more zombies and blood and stuff. And I was like, well, as I was watching it, I was like, I think, you know, the thing with Romero is he was just more interested in ideas and talking about ideas than he was in carnage. There's lots of it.
Right.
It'll happen.
A shit ton of it in here, but it's not the point of the movie.
He's not there to make, I don't think he was ever really there. I mean, he was good at making horror movies, but I think he always knew that there was something more exciting to explore than the horror itself.
Yes.
And that's what made it horror. Like, yeah. Is how you explore these things. And I know that you and I are, it's really easy to make fun of this guy. It's so fun to have a goof with George Romero and, like, oh, it's about capitalism. Surprise, surprise, you know?
Right.
Or to make fun of his later films. But this guy was always doing it for himself and was always, honestly, doing what was right, I think.
Yeah. It makes me feel that all the hardcore horror fans who are like, I don't want politics in my horror. It's like, have you ever watched any George Romero movie?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Only the father, the creator of the zombie film genre.
Yeah. And, like, everybody loves George Romero, you know? And yeah. Day of the Dead, I mean, Bub is a horror icon.
Oh, yeah.
In and of himself. And it's like, have you actually watched the movies? Like, they're all political.
But isn't it telling that Day of the Dead was always sort of, I think, until like, maybe the last 20 years or 10 years... Day of the Dead was always kind of dissed in horror fandom. And, like, I remember when I was a youth growing up and looking on websites that just, like, where, you know, back when everyone just put up their website where they're like, here's my favorite horror movies, and you click it and it has their thoughts and then a little GIF at the bottom and the counter. Like, the one that everyone would go through, the Of the Deads, because everyone loved all of them. And that was when there were only three of them. And Day of the Dead was always the one that got shat on. And people would always say, George Romero had bigger plans, and it's a shame they couldn't do it, and...
Yeah, I don't get it. It's always... I mean, I love Night of the Living Dead, but this one is, like, tied with it for me, as my two favorites of the original trilogy, and definitely of all of his Of the Dead movies. Even... Box Social of the Dead, I say. Like, it's not as good as a day. I mean, it's... this movie is fucking wicked. The gore makes you scream, if that's what you're into.
Tom Savini, love of my life.
It's some of his best work, for sure. And I just think... I mean, I guess it makes sense that people wouldn't like it. I think this movie is a really terrific examination of toxic masculinity.
My God. And, motherfucker, is Sarah not the goddamn coolest?
Yeah. And she's a response to Barbara in Night of the Living Dead that, I don't have problems with Barbara in Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
I love that character. But Romero has always felt that he was perpetrating a bad stereotype of, like, the useless, panic-riddled woman who doesn't do anything.
To the point that she became Jean-Claude Van Damme in the remake.
Right, yeah. And so a character like Sarah is him trying to course correct. And it's like, yeah. how many filmmakers do you hear of, in horror especially, who are like, you know what? I could do better than what I did.
Even, I mean, like in Dawn of the Dead, I love Galen Ross. We all love Galen Ross. She's perfect. Yeah. But like, you know, she just kind of experiences the movie, her character.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas Sarah, in it, I mean, as portrayed by Lori Cardill, who is an icon, like, she is the lead in this film right from the get-go.
Yes.
She is who the audience is tasked with identifying with. She holds our sympathies. And from the moment the movie begins, she is putting up with male bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And she is screaming back at it.
Yes.
All the way through the movie. And she is fearless.
Yep.
She's a fearless fucking badass.
Yeah. And I love that she gets it from all sides. Like, I think that's one thing this movie does really well, is it's like, you have the army guys and you have the scientists. Mm-hmm. And she's putting up with it from everybody.
Even from her fucking boyfriend.
Even from her boyfriend, you know? It's like it's all the men. And yet, one thing I really, really, really cannot overstate how much I appreciate about this movie is that there is no threat of sexual violence against her. No. That would have been such an easy path to take with this kind of movie. She's the only woman in the film, except for some zombies. She's in an underground bunker with hostile alpha male army dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you like to me, even though I've seen this a billion times, in that, with those kind of ratios, you think to yourself, oh God, is somebody gonna, you know, what's gonna happen to her in that regard? And he never goes there at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
There's just the implication, like, there's an acknowledgement of it.
Yes.
With Rose, and everyone talking about, you know, you're the only woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, an implication. And she just looks at him with so much hate in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if this was made by Eli Roth or the Soska sisters or something, like, you know that would have happened.
Yeah. Well, look at, it makes me think of 28 Days Later, which essentially takes the entire original Romero trilogy and condenses it into one film.
Yes.
Right? You have Night of the Living Dead with the outbreak. You have Dawn of the Dead, where they're, like, on the shopping spree, and, oh, look at this new society, it's kind of fun. And then the army guys show up, and it turns into Day of the Dead. And what happens? The women are separated. They're gonna have to have sex, well, get raped by all of the men, because we need to think about populations, and you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Mm-hmm. It's gross.
Like, I'm tired of that being a way to not only, like, what they think is raising the stakes. But it's like, the men in Day of the Dead, the shitty men, are shitty men without having to go there. There are other ways to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and... Man. I'm gonna create an argument throughout this episode, I think, that this is a queer horror classic. But part of that also is that, in tandem with what you just said about, you know, that there's no stakes about impregnating her.
Right.
This is not a movie that ultimately, this is not concerned with reproduction. This is not concerned with continuing to enable or proliferating the heterosexual matrix. And the ending, it confirms that, affirms that. This is, I don't know, there's so much about heterosexual apocalyptic storylines are about the next generation continuing in the end. And there being more time for humanity, and we will persevere. And this movie is like, okay, well, now we have a nice vacation, and then it's over. And yeah,
John, who's the one pressing for this, like, let's just fuck off to an island.
Yeah.
You know, like, he throws it out there at some point, like, as long as there are people, like, we can make babies. Yeah. But he doesn't state it like it's a mandate of, like, we need to perpetuate the human race and whatever. He's like, it's been fucked. We're paying the price. Let's just enjoy ourselves until the end.
That scene when he's talking about that and he's like, yeah, he says, like, you know, if we got some babies, we'd have to teach them right. And he's going through all the records because they're in this bunker and there's all these records of every... all these human events and tax records and just all kinds of cars and just all relics, all these examples of human achievement in Americana. And he's like, and if we teach those kids, we got to make sure that they never dig up these records.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just let everything from our world, everything from this toxic masculinity, militarized industrial complex world, that this all has to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so, it's so ahead of its time and it's so thoughtful.
Yeah.
And George Romero is such a motherfucker. I love him.
I know. I love him.
I love George Romero. I miss him.
This really made me miss him a lot.
He's just, you watch his films and you're like, this is a good guy.
Yeah, he was a real one. You know?
He wrote a horrible screenplay for Resident Evil, and I don't care because he is a really good guy, and he gives me the warm fuzzies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was like, I got to meet him once at a convention, and it's like, he was a fucking sweetheart. Like, he was so nice.
He was...
like, that's just who he was, you know?
Yeah, he was real.
Yeah.
He was scheduled for Crypticon, I think last year, or no, when did he die? Was it 2 years ago?
Like 17, I think.
Yeah. Well, he was scheduled for our convention then, and then like the week of, he had to cancel because he was ill, and then he died.
Oh, man.
And George Romero was such a, like, I've talked on the show about how Dawn of the Dead was super formative for me. That was one of my horror roots. And yeah. That sucks, but.
Creepshow is, I mean, means everything to me. You know,
oh, like, yeah.
He's such a huge part of my existence as a horror fan.
Yeah,
absolutely. Even though, yeah, it's fun to make fun of his clunkier stuff, but even then, it's like, at least he was trying something.
That's why I like the clunky stuff too. Like, I make fun of Land of the Dead and Diary of the Dead. I really like watching them when I do watch them because they're fun.
Right.
They're silly, but it's also like, he was doing what he wanted to do.
Yes.
He found a bunch of young actors and student actors, and he was basically putting them through his own film school, just making movies in his twilight years because he still could.
Mm-hmm.
And he was keeping them indie, and he was doing whatever the fuck he wanted. And by the end of it, he wanted to make live-action zombie cartoons set on Irish islands.
Right.
And that's what he wanted to do, and he fucking did it.
Yeah.
It's like prequel, if it's like George Lucas making the prequels, but if he wasn't sitting in a chair and he was teaching people and he had heart. Like,
right, yeah.
I love you, George Romero.
I know. I just so admire that he was like indie to the end, you know? Like, if you look at the making of Night of the Living Dead, it's like, that is my creative ideal.
Yeah.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Like, these people making it because they want to make it with whatever money they can scrounge up in their and resources they can scrounge up in their spare time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And he
just carried that spirit.
Can you believe, is there any other master of horror that a film that they did that literally was not only one of the most influential horror movies of all time, but also created an entire subgenre? And monster. I mean, we had zombies. We had, like, I Walk with the Zombie and White Zombie, but that was more of the just sort of entranced, hypnotized...
the voodoo zombie.
Voodoo zombies, yeah.
Yeah.
Versus, like, these flesh-eating, the brain-eating ghouls.
Right.
It entirely comes from Romero. But, mm-hmm. like, is there any other instance of a horror filmmaker that single-handedly built a genre and made a name and became a legend with such an iconic film that also was public domain?
I know.
That they don't get anything from?
I know.
Like, that's how fucking indie this guy was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's heartbreaking because it's like it prevented him from doing a lot of other things that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, but man, but Night of the Living Dead is in the Criterion Collection now, you know?
Yeah. Ah! I love him. I love this movie.
I love this movie so much.
I can't get over Sarah. I mean, the last time I watched this movie was maybe 10 years ago. I've seen it several times. But watching it last night was like, especially during this, like not the three inning. Well, I mean, that probably helped because I was coming off of Rings and wanting to lobotomize myself. But after my day turning into Samara's avatar. But it just with Quarantine 2,
mm-hmm.
It feels so timely.
Yes.
The military, they aren't listening to scientists who are actually trying to figure things out. They're all just so fucking impatient and they all just want to wage chaos because they can, because they're obsessed with their egos and their freedom, mm-hmm. and having power over people and their guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is really prophetic of what, yeah. I mean, this is what the end times do look like.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely. I've never watched Day of the Dead while living through it, and...
Yeah. My, yeah.
That, I think that's why I connected with it so hard last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably haven't watched it in like 10 years either. I remember writing about it for Final Girl. One of the Shocktobers passed. I think it might have been 2010, where people were giving their top 10 lists. And I put this in mine.
Yeah.
And it would still be there. I fucking love this movie. It just has everything. It's got the political angle. It's got an incredible female character.
God.
It touches on race. It touches on the whole toxic masculinity thing. And then just on a surface level, like, I am screaming at some of this gore. It's
it's God.
Disgusting in such a fun way. You know.
It's and with you know, with his budget being slashed, with all the problems that Romero encountered with production on this and how much they had to scale it down from his original screenplay or vision,
mm-hmm.
even still, man, it starts out, that music is so fucking good.
Oh, the opening is...
so fucking good. And then she gets in that city. There's a bank alligator. I don't know why, but he's really cool. He's just hanging out on those steps.
They got that an newspaper? Alligator. They got an alligator. Newspaper. Seeing this being my entry point to zombie cinema, basically, that opening scene scared me. Like nobody's business. The like post-apocalyptic empty streets, the newspaper, the dead walk. It's like that kind of like that sort of thing being reality terrifies me.
The 1-2 punch of the newspaper, and how did they even get that newspaper to blow up?
Yeah.
Like it's laying flat, the wind hits. The newspaper blows up and you just see the dead walk. It's so fucking cool. 1-2 mm-hmm. punch, you get that, and then you get that nasty ass zombie. You told me his name in fandom.
Oh yeah, Dr. Tongue.
Dr. Tongue without the lower jaw. The camera pans up as he shuffles by. It's so fucking cool.
It's so cool. And I love that like it's funny to me. To look at the zombie hordes and it's like, there's the clown, there's Sunday's Finest, there's the majorette, man. Cigar Man, the ballerina. Majorette, the line cook, you yeah. know, the football player.
Tommy Bahama.
Like, yeah, all the Tommy Bahamas. But the fact that it's like, no CGI, the fact that like, I mean, God bless those fucking extras. Who surely sat for so many hours getting makeup done. And it's like there are hundreds of zombies and they are all individuals.
Yes. Well, and that's another thing that Romero always loved doing because he identified with the zombies.
Right.
And that's one thing he always loved doing was giving them these elaborate characters and costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And making each zombie unique and not... It really... There is something really thoughtful about that. Like, it reminds you that these were living people.
Yes.
And these are wholly contained stories built into each corpse.
Yes.
Even if it's a little funny when you see a clown or the ballerina or get majorette. Or yeah. I personally loved Beach Shopping Gal, and she just had her oversized wicker bag, her weaved bag.
Yeah. But it's like, it also, the way fans go with that, and the fact that they do, it is silly, but like, you look at the convention circuit, and like, especially in the Pittsburgh area, who was a mainstay at the conventions? Sweater Zombie and Nurse Zombie from Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And when I say those names, if you've seen that movie, you know exactly who they are.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, the fact that they, even though they were just another couple of zombies in the crowd, it's like, they become more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't all have to be Bub, you know,
no.
to be special.
But they, I mean, but for every Bub, there's a Hare Krishna zombie. Like, right. they stay yeah. with you.
Yeah.
There, he infused, somehow, he, just the vision of putting them in these costumes and then the work put in by literally extras.
Yeah.
turns them into fleshed out characters in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool.
The payoff is incredible. My favorite, like, as just the pure, I want to be scared horror fan, the beginning of this movie, and then at the end when Miguel fucking drops the elevator and it's full of zombies. I'm just like, yes! It's so cool!
Yeah.
It's so cool and terrifying.
Yeah. Ugh. It's so rad. And I love that, like, even that, like, that, I'm still thinking about the newspaper blown up and the dead walk, and, like, that, that's the ending of Resident Evil. Like, Milo walks out of the hospital, the whole city's abandoned, and the newspaper blows by that says the dead walk. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's, horror fans, why do we do this thing to ourselves where a movie comes out, we shit on it for at least a decade or two.
Yeah.
And then we realize what fucking gold we were handed to us.
Yeah.
That's Day of the Dead.
Yes. Yeah. I've never understood why people don't like this movie. I mean, on one level I do, because I'm like, oh, you don't like it when it's kind of the mirrors pointing back at you.
Dr. Lecter,
do you? Where's my Gina Tay bath splash? Right. You don't like that, do you, Dr. Lecter?
Don't you?
So then you don't like the movie itself. But man, just the thrills of this movie. I love the stupid escape the cave sequence with all that Creepshow lighting.
Oh, it's so, that's what we said. It's so Creepshow with that red siren, red alarms going off and flashing the red light.
The red and the blue, yep.
Oh. The cave sequence freaked me out.
Yeah.
Like, surprise zombie. I mean, it's funny because Romero always does this where the zombies are so loud and so slow, and yet they always just sneak up on you.
And yes.
It never makes sense, but you just go with it because he loves doing that.
Yeah.
But that sequence where it's filmed so dark and blue, mm-hmm. when like the arm pops out of the concrete or whatever, or all the rubble, and then another one pops up behind you, like, it's scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarah's, there's always the sneaky one.
Sarah's dreams, that opening dream that she has in that first scene after the intro,
mm-hmm.
where all the hands come through the wall. Like, could that, I mean, once again, iconic.
Yeah. It's wicked. This movie is wicked. Like, every moment of gore in this movie is burned into my brain. Oh, all the, like, the bodies turning over on the gurney and their guts fucking fall out on the floor.
And then she has a nightmare about that with Miguel.
Yeah, she has the nightmare. And I'm like, man.
You can hear the slap of the entrails and it's almost like they're steaming off the floor. Oh, yeah. It's so gross.
Yeah. This movie, you know, it's a trope of zombie cinema to have the feast scene. You know, that where someone gets pulled apart and then the zombies, like, take their time and have their buffet. Their Wendy's salad bar experience.
Oh, right? Sliced cucumber.
Yeah. Pudding. You know, and, like, in Night of the Living Dead, that happens to Barbara. And that's unusual because she's the good girl. And it's like, this is a fate reserved for the bad characters. And at the end of this movie, every fucking army guy gets a feast seat. It's not just one. It's not just Rhodes who ends
I remembered it just being Rhodes.
Yeah, it's every one of them. And they're all different, even though they all suffer the same fate. They're all different. Rhodes gets pulled in half. Like, this other guy gets his eye fucking cut out. One guy gets his head pulled off, and his vocal cords get tighter and tighter, and his voice gets higher as he screams. Yeah.
I felt bad for him because I hate all the military guys, but him, he was the stoner babe that was topless, farming his weed in the opening scene. And the whole time he was just kind of in the background being high, smoking his joint and being a babe. So I was like, I'm okay with you. The rest of them all need to die. But I was like, oh, my poor little high pitched babe. Getting his head ripped off.
Yeah. It's just, they all get ripped apart, and it's so good. It's so fucking gross.
Satisfying.
It really is.
It's that feast sequence in the end when it just, some of it doesn't even make sense. They cut to a shot of the experimentation room with Bub, and you see through the glass, and then all of a sudden there's just a huge arterial spray just spraying all over the wall. And I'm like, who's alive at that point to generate that kind of blood flow? But oh well. Yeah. It just gets so nasty. You see the woman, and she's like the one of the women zombies, and she's just chewing on some sausagey intestines, and then she pulls dog teeth out like she's grossed out by the dog tags.
The dog tags, yeah.
Yeah, and then she goes back to her intro.
Really go all in. It's wicked gross.
It's so gnarly. I guess, I mean, if I had any, I don't even have a real critique of this film. If I had any issue, it's that, I mean, Sarah, it's her movie until the chaos starts. And then she's just kind of running through the tunnel. But it's like, but she's still doing that as part of a team with McDermott and John.
Right.
And then, so it's like, it's kind of the story then just becomes this revenge satisfaction of getting to see all these shitty assholes die.
Yeah.
And a stoner babe.
It's just at that point, we haven't had zombie carnage up to that point. Well, I mean, there's the accident at the OK Zombie Corral. Where somebody gets bit and then, you know.
Miguel just needs to get his shit together.
Yeah, he does. Although he was right, it wasn't his fault.
Wasn't his fault. And also, I mean, while he's arguably the worst and definitely takes things out on Sarah, he's also clearly experiencing trauma of being sucked into and recruited by this toxic masculine world.
Right. Yeah.
And he can't take it anymore.
He's not allowed to have emotions.
Yeah.
And to not be okay with what's going on. That's the thing, too, is like, I love that, like, the threat of sexual violence isn't here, because while all the army guys are such assholes and are clearly the villains, they also have a point to all of this, which is like, we're putting our lives in danger. We don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. You're taking your sweet ass time.
You're taking your time. How long can this last? We're running out of supplies.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, while they're still the villains, and you still are so happy when they all die, they're not just cartoons, I guess.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't always like this. Like, this fever pitch is a new development because of the introduction of Rhodes as the captain.
Yes,
now, after the death of the previous Major Tom Summers, whatever his name was.
Yeah, Cooper. Yeah.
Who Logan had killed and fed to some zombies.
Yeah. And, like, as they, you know, are trying to go out to find other survivors, et cetera, it's like everybody's getting more and more desperate. And in this kind of situation, something is always going to boil over.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love it. I love that while you're on the side of the scientists, obviously, in this situation, I do love the twist where they find the tape of Logan, and it's like,
Mommy.
He's fucking crazy. Like, I love that little twist.
Well, and it's so hilarious and fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm doing a playthrough of Arkham Asylum right now, like my second playthrough of that after however many years, 12 to 11 years, and you discover little tapes. And it's just the inmates, like, acting out their weird wacko dramas in their cells. Mm-hmm. And this is just another one of those. It's just Logan being fucking bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
How is he in charge of the scientists? Nobody knows.
I know.
But
well,
even...
again, this is we are far into the process here.
Yeah.
So he may have started off fine, but
yeah, he's lost his mind, and now he's talking to mommy when he isn't cutting up army men, feeding them to Bub.
Yeah.
Like he, but also that Romero isn't just, it's not like this absolutist, like the military's evil and science is good.
Right.
Like
yeah.
He's critical of both entities in this, mm-hmm. where like even Sarah goes off on Logan and she's like, you're wasting this time trying to define what's happening rather than trying to find what's causing it.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, like that need to define it, to control it, like that's this idea of settling, of conquering, of colonizing. And
right,
versus
yeah,
she's
yeah.
looking, she wants to see the symptom. She wants to treat the symptom.
Yeah, she's, you know, it's, she's looking for a cure or a vaccine or something like that. And Logan is saying, like, how can we dominate them and control them and use them as tools?
Yeah, while basically. Sarah wants to confront the systemic problem at its root.
Mm-hmm.
And then the military, they're all shitty assholes, but you still get a stoner babe who just wants to grow his weed. And you get Miguel, who is a victim of masculinity and is mm-hmm. living through the trauma of it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I love George Romero so much.
I know. I even, perhaps I was feeling generous that my brain has gone soft thanks to the three inning. But I noticed for the first time also that Rhodes is wearing what could be interpreted as a wedding ring.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, he's got a ring on that finger. And it's like, it could be just like, you know, men at a certain point in time used to wear rings. Like, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It could be, or it could actually be a wedding ring. And just for a second, you say to yourself, it doesn't excuse anything, but maybe part of where he's coming from, who knows what he's had to deal with also.
Yeah, what did he lose?
What did he lose? Everybody's lost.
Everyone has lost all of their entire lives at this point. The entire world is over.
Yeah.
And they are just stuck in a bunker going nuts together.
Mm-hmm.
And taking it out on each other.
I always forget this movie when I think about, like, one-location horror movies. Like, I realize it begins with that city street and it ends on the island or whatever. But it's like, basically, this is a one-location horror movie.
It could be a radio drama in a bunker.
It could be a radio, yeah.
It's people talking.
It's so good. And from now on, when I think one-location horror, I'm gonna remember Day of the Dead.
Oh, man, Day of the Dead. And it's so many interesting balancing act. Rhodes is such a fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. He's almost too much.
Yeah.
Great acting though.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Pilato,
Joe Pilato.
Joe
yeah.
Pilato does an incredible job as this fucking, like, you just hate this man so much that it is so deserved when you get that feast scene. That's why that's the thing I primarily remember.
And yet, when he is getting ripped apart and he's going, choke on him, as the zombies drag his legs away, you're like, yeah, fuck yeah, Rhodes. Like,
yeah, you know? It's cool.
It's fucking cool.
And that's just because he's a great actor.
Yeah.
Laurie Carzel fucking kills it as Sarah. Mm-hmm. And it did help, too, that I, like, kind of saw some Mary Warnoff energy in her and her voice. But she's just like, oh, she's fucking wicked. I love John Amplis. I just love him. He is an angel.
He really is an angel. And, you know, that kind of thing to me is like, John Amplis is, of course, like a Romero mainstay.
Yes.
He was Martin. He was Nathan Grantham in Creepshow. I love it when filmmakers work with actors over and over again, when
yes.
they have their own troupe, because it just points to it being a good creative environment and good people, I guess.
It's a family, in a
yeah.
way. I mean,
yeah.
you look at the Dreamland Players, John Waters. Mm-hmm. Like, they were mm-hmm. a fucking weirdo traveling circus family,
yeah.
cultist.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
it's really nice. Yeah, and I just love John Amplis. I love mm-hmm. him. I love...
He's adorable.
I love... What I really got on this viewing, besides how much I love it and how perfect Sarah is, I love John and McDermott.
Mm-hmm.
And I am here to stand them as a gay couple.
Oh.
I had never seen it before. This view, I was like, they're 100% a gay couple.
They do set and up their little house.
Let me tell you why. Thank you. They're, everyone's living in this fucking cave bunker, right? You got the military. They all live in their barracks. You have the scientists all living in their white cement rooms. And then at the end of the hallway, you have the people that don't help, who aren't contributing in any way, except occasionally they take you in a helicopter. And they live in their mid-century ranch shanty dream home. Called the Ritz, which you walk into, and they have a Bless Our Home art piece on the wall. They have tchotchkes everywhere. There's definitely not room for more than one bed. They spend their time drinking and sitting in their backyard that they've made with lawn flamingos and mid-century patio furniture.
Yeah, they're I'll allow
couple.
It.
They're a I'll fucking gay couple.
I'll allow it.
When McDermott walks up to him and puts his hands on John's chest as a sign to go grab the guns.
Yeah.
I said, that's the militia I want. I want the mid-century militia living in the Ritz. And what happens in the end of this movie? The woman and the gay couple get away to their island.
Right.
They fly off. They eat crabs. They don't reproduce. And they just have a wonderful vacation. They get their groove back at the end of the world.
I'm into it. I never, that's the thing. Maybe it's that I'm not, I don't know, a straight person or a person driven to have progeny. But I just never understand the angle in the apocalyptic shit where it's like, we have to keep the human race going.
Oh, right. That's why you loved The Quiet Place so much.
Yeah. Like, I just, when it becomes the mandate of like, look, I know that like, we're not a couple or like, you're gay, I'm gay, whatever, but we have to keep the human race going. It's like, why? Who cares? I'm going to die in however long. What the fuck care do I have?
Yeah.
I'll be dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, usually, what? To perpetuate the shitty system that got us to this place in the first place?
That's what it is. It's designed to keep, the heterosexual binary in control, in place. Mm-hmm. And control over the planet and this illusion of domination.
It's like, it's never, let's take this terrible opportunity, it's reflected right now in what we're living through. Let's take this terrible opportunity and use it as a way to come out of it with something better.
Yeah, no.
It's never, ever that.
No, it's reopened. It's go back to business as usual. It's
yeah. And it's like now, in Corona times, we have a chance to like reassess the 40-hour work week, mm-hmm. all of these things that we have mm-hmm. conveniently, like, cast aside for months. It's like, we could just do that and come up with a new way.
Stacey, stop talking. Put the splash guard back on your head. Stop talking crazy talk.
I know. Bye.
It's proven that that won't work because we've never tried.
Right. This is true.
So it's been
proven. I forget that we've never tried.
Obviously, it could never happen because we never thought about it or considered it. So why would you even put that thought in your evil little commie brain?
I know.
But that's the thing. It's like there's this book of queer theory that I was really into at first on paper. Ultimately, like, it was unreadable because it's just academia that wants to prove to itself it knows how to say big Lacanian words.
Oh, yeah.
It's called No Future by Lee Edelman. And it looks at this idea, it looks at queerness as a rejection of this obsession with futurity. That it's like, okay, it's analyzing queerness as a love for the death drive, kind of. Like, we want to make this world livable and enjoy our lives as we live them.
Right.
Versus the heterosexual, white supremacist hegemony. Thank you.
Hegemony.
White supremacist hegemony wants to just self-proliferate and continue to control.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why whiteness, capitalism, all these things are set. It's built into the language. It's self-perpetuating.
Yeah. And it's like, to what end? So that people can have some more money before they die? Like, we're all gonna, surprise, we're all gonna die, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we present all of that. We wrap that all up in family values and this idea of the core nuclear core family unit.
Yes, a family can only look like one thing.
Yeah, and this is what Jesus argued for, and this is why we must fight for the family and focus on the family and protect the children. And what about the children? It's never about it's like the clapback, like I saw and experienced with Drag Queen Storytime. It's never about protecting the children. It's about protecting the system that the children enter into so that they have no other choice but to repeat the cycle.
Right. Well, look at, you know, the pro-life brigade. It's like, you know, you can't have an abortion. Life is precious. But did the baby come out? Okay, well, then you're on your own.
Yeah, fuck you.
Fuck you. We're not going to give you any assistance. It's like the cluster of cells matters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the actual person, like, no, whatever.
Don't you even don't dare try to get on welfare.
Yeah, you don't want a government handout, do you?
You can't get an abortion and you can't get healthcare either.
Yeah. It's just, it's so frustrating, and it's just, I just feel like, where's my, the heads they signal that I can light up?
It's just, oh my god, it's so fucking dykey, it's just a spotlit Labrys.
Yeah! Yeah, the Labrys, and then the heads they comes out and just starts chopping off heads. Like, it doesn't have to be the way it has been.
It's a Labrys. Do you know what that means?
You know what that means.
Oh, and that's what the
heads they sounds like. Also, sounds like Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah, yeah. She's the off with their head.
Yeah.
It's chopping time.
Yeah.
With the fucking Labrys behind her. Jim Gordon lighting up the Labrys. Sorry, Jane Gordon.
Jane Gordon, thank you.
Lighting up the Labrys. Oh!
It, I don't know.
The fact that, and honestly, like, we are, you know, we are two millennium era rambling, angry, fag, dyke queers. Yeah. Talking about very contemporary things and bringing our own reads into this conversation. However, all of the theoretical underpinnings of everything we've just discussed is entirely built into this film by Romero.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that ending happens. That's why John says we can't let the future find these records.
Right.
That's why we get those beautiful zombie feast sequences. It's condemning everything that we just take as how we're supposed to live as for granted.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that, but that would mean that, like, horror movie is political. And
oh god, I don't want to. I don't want to touch it.
If this movie is political, I'm gonna change my opinion about it. Because no, thank you. Can't I just watch guts fall on the floor without having to think about it?
I was told shopping mall.
Yeah. 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 So, it's a perfect movie.
It's so good. I think this might actually now be my favorite of the series.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead, just the sheer insanity and fun.
Yeah.
And the setting, it's so, you know, you'll never top that. And the filmmaking, that rebel, youthful filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
It's so creative and fun. But this movie just...
Yeah.
It has so much more to say. I mean, yeah, Dawn of the Dead, you get the scene where all of a sudden their little apartment hovel has now become a showroom for luxury brands.
Right.
And for Micah. But the commentary that you get here, the condemnations you get here, the badass woman character you get here.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching movies from the 80s, 70s, movies from anywhere, any time before, well, I guess before 2015/19, where you only get one woman in the cast and she's there to just, like, you know, have sex or give birth. And this movie, only one woman in the cast, and it's for a reason.
It's for a reason. And it I love works. The fact that she's not an army lady. She's like tough and puts up with no shit, but he doesn't make her then like one of the army people. Like, she's a fucking scientist.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a scientist. We know that she's a scientist because she talks about it and because we get a shot of her looking through a microscope and circling a part of a brain on a transparency.
Yeah. She wears a lab coat. Hello. And when her boyfriend is being shitty, she doesn't capitulate. She's like, all right, well, fuck you. Yeah. And that's the end of that. Like,
how fucking cool. Yeah. She's like, okay. Like, she sedates him at one point because he won't stop mouthing off. She puts him to bed. She just tells him to get out when it's time to get out. He gets bit by a zombie. She's like, I got this. She fucking saws his arm off with a machete. And then,
excuse me, she chops it. She does not saw it.
Well, she starts with a chop and then she grinds that machete down. Yeah. She seesaws it off because she gets it stuck in the flesh and she seesaws her rest of the way down. Oh, and so then she's like, Gaze, I need some fire. And they're like, well,
did you say flame?
Ooh, I think I have just the paisley scarf. Then the flaming happens. She fucking cauterizes the wound with her homemade torch. And then the military's like, we have to kill him. She's like, I'll fucking kill him myself, you goddamn cucks.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
Yeah. She really is. If you haven't watched this in a while, listeners, it's not one of the, it's never really talked about, right? Like, everybody talks about Bub, who is amazing, and it's an incredible performance. It's an incredible performance by Howard German.
It's beautiful.
It really is.
It's really thoughtful and compassionate and sad and sweet.
Yes. Yeah. But people, when they talk about this movie, they talk about Bub. If you haven't watched it in a while or something, watch it again. It's better than you remember.
Yes.
Even if you loved it, it's better than you remember.
Especially now. This could not...
Especially now.
It could not be more timely.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the dead are walking, right? All these motherfuckers who won't wear a mask. They're just not dead yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're too busy stuck in our own fucking dramas to confront the actual problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're all, like she said, we're too busy trying to define it than to figure out what's making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, this movie's so good.
This movie's so good.
I love, once again, yes, I love Bub. It's funny that this film in the fandom just is known for the cosplay.
Yeah.
You can be Bub at a convention. There is so much more in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Bub is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of this film.
Yeah.
Of an incredible film.
Yeah.
It's
his masterpiece, I think. It's where everything, I think everything really comes together. All of the superficial horror stuff, his politics, mm-hmm. I think it all really comes together.
Yeah.
In a perfect way in this movie.
Yeah. His dialogue, his writing in this script is so good.
Mm-hmm.
The script is so good. It's got a bank alligator.
It's got a bank alligator.
He looks so happy.
What more do you need? He had his moment. It's a perfect way to end our fundraiser.
Yeah. Yeah, with a happy ending.
With a happy, gross ending.
Such a gross ending.
Such a gross ending. Oh. And I mean, as you're listening to this, maybe the fundraiser isn't over. Maybe there's still some hours left. Give it a checky check. See if you can chip in a dollar.
Yeah, you know? Chip in a dollar. Send the link to grandma.
Send the link to grandma.
And she'll say, I love the Del Rubio triplets. Exactly. How can I help them?
How can I help?
Retweet if you can. Like we said, this is running through either Sunday night or Monday night. We don't know which. But if there is a green button that says donate, you can still donate. And even if we've reached the tip of that green thermometer, you can continue to just... pumper full of mercury, baby.
Yeah, it's not just the tip. It's the whole... This is the end of the three inning.
Stacy, we are at... Can I get another air horn? Because we have a... complete with the beach ball.
Yeah.
We are at, just through the course of this episode, we are now at $4,873 raised
by... Oh my God.
104 beautiful, sexy, comely listeners.
Oh.
Man. May the Sarahs and the Johns and the McDermotts of the world smile down on you from their island timeshare.
Yeah.
Wow. We are so close to that $5,000 goal. I feel like we'll have hit this by the time the episode comes out. So please, please continue to donate. Let's see how high we can get this how much we can raise for the National Black Justice Coalition. It's so cool.
It's a vital cause. Thank you for listening this week. Yeah. Thank you for donating if you already have, or spreading the word or whatever.
Yeah.
It's what a crazy week. What a crazy week.
Now, I'm going to say, Stacey, one, never again. But also, I can't wait to do it again.
I can't wait for the re-three inning.
There's so many threes we haven't got to. It turns out there's a lot of great threes.
Yeah.
There's also some really bad threes, like rings.
Sure,
mistakes will... Listen, we're always learning. We will continue to make horrible mistakes, like rings.
Absolutely. It's one of our hallmarks, I would say.
So, best known for their mistakes.
Yeah.
So we will continue. Hopefully down the line we'll get to do this again, and we will have more beautiful films like Day of the Dead, and we'll have more what the fuck miracles like Blade Trinity, and more complete atrocities like Rings. But we also will be back we don't know when exactly, but we'll be back soon with a little wrap up.
Yeah.
So we can, once our fundraiser has actually ended, so we can just talk about how much we raised and how to continue to support. So look out for that.
Otherwise, time for this salad bar to hit the road. Beep beep. Wow, for a haunted tome made out of skin, it's so loosely structured, yet informative.
I know, right? Is it over?
It's glowing and spinning on its own, so I'm gonna guess yes.
Ah, oh my god! Oh my god!
Tune in next time for more Gaylords of Darkness!
Ha ha ha.